Welcome to Dune Reads Goosebumps. I am Dune, and this is part one of How I Got My Shrunken Head by R.L. Stine on Dune Reads Goosebumps. This was suggested by Justin D. That's like suggesting? Whew. We're off to a bad start, and I just took a shot of tequila. Speaking of shot of tequila, I just got a couple more tattoos. One of them is a shot of tequila and a lime on my wrist, which I realized the next day points right at an officer's eyes if I have my hand at 10 and 2. So that'll lead to a DUI. And then I got a restaurant called the Bally High in San Diego because I love the old San Diego Bay. And it has a little perfect view of it. So yeah, what's been going on with me? Just migraine stuff. This is going insane. I have a neurology thing on Monday. I had acupuncture yesterday, and I go tomorrow, and then I have to go fucking again and again and again, and 2 days before that, and I don't even believe in it, I'm gonna be honest, but my doctor suggested it, and my girlfriend says it's a solid plan, so I'm doing it, but it's just like, Jesus fucking Christ, I get stabbed with like a dozen needles, and I just sit there for 45 minutes. Ugh. You know, like, the thing with the fucking migraines is just, now they're back to being more frequent. Every time I get one, that day's ruined, even if I take medicine and can, like, stop it. And then the next day, I just have a headache all day, like my brain is fucking bruised from whatever damage I did to it previously. So it takes, like, 2 days out of my life each time, and they happen now, realistically, on average, every week and a half, and I'm just fucking going insane. Like, I want to, like, if this keeps up, I'm just going to be, like, weird, shut-in drunk guy that tries to do nothing, and I just go to work and go home and drink, and I don't shave, and I don't care. I don't shave anyway. What the fuck am I talking about? And I'm an alcoholic. So pretty much I want to just be myself, but not do Goosebumps and just be miserable, because I fucking hate these things. The cover of the book has a baseball mitt, a baseball, a sock that's presumably used as a jizz rag, and a shrunken head that kind of looks like an alien head. And then there's a pennant in the background that says, University! And the little tagline thing is, Heads up! That's good stuff, I guess. I just had that shot. I just had a 211 tall can, and now I'm drinking a Negro Modelo. Chapter 1 of How I Got My Shrunken Head by R.L. Stine on Dune Reads Goosebumps. Have you ever played The Jungle King? It's a computer game and it's really cool. Unless you sink into a quicksand pit or get squeezed to death by living vines. Alright, so it's like Pitfall. I can figure out what Pitfall's like. You've got to be fast to swing from vine to vine without letting them curl around your body, and to grab the shrunken heads that are hidden under trees and bushes. Alright, so it's like the reissue of Pitfall that wasn't good and no one cared about, and they thought everyone would care about it. If you collect 10 shrunken heads, you get an extra life! You need a lot of extra lives in this game. It's not for beginners. I'm always tempted now with video games because I have no time to, like I just started replaying fucking Batman Arkham City because it's on PlayStation Plus this month. And I was like, I'm so tempted to just play on easy so I can get through the story without it. But no. I always end up playing on normal because, you know, judging myself. My friends Eric and Joel play Jungle King with me. They are 12, like me. My sister Jessica's 8. She hangs around, but we don't let her play because we're misogynists. That's because she always dives into the quicksand pits.
Scarlet! Come here!
She likes the thwook, thwook, thwook sound it makes when your body is being sucked under. I liked eating the shields in Sonic because they go whoom, and that made me happy. Jessica just doesn't get it. Mark, why can't we play a different game? Joel asked me. I knew why he wanted to quit. He had just been trampled by a red rhino. The meanest kind. Joel, Eric, wait, is this actually Donkey Kong? There's rhinos and vine swinging? Think how racist Donkey Kong would be if you just had a black guy instead. Now that I say it, just replacing a gorilla with a black guy in any context is very racist, and I'm the racist, not the designers of Donkey Kong. P. Diddy Kong? No? No? All right. Joel, Eric, and I were up in my room during our winter break from school, huddled around my computer. Jessica was in the window seat, reading a book. Sunlight poured over her, making her red hair sparkle. Red hair looks great on women, but not on guys. Kalia! I shouted as I picked up my eighth shrunken head. Kalia is a jungle cry. It's a word that popped into my head one day. I guess I made it up. My face was 2 inches from the monitor screen. I ducked as spears came flying at me from behind a leafy fern. That's the spear sound from the Indiana Jones ride at Disneyland. Kalia! I let out my battle cry as if I were in Skyrim as I picked up another shrunken head. Come on, Mark, Eric pleaded. Don't you have any other games? Yeah. Don't you have any sports games? Joel demanded. How about March Madness basketball? That's a cool game. How about mutant football? Eric asked. For the kids listening that don't remember, but do remember Goosebumps, which is strange, there were a series of games called Mutant League Baseball and Mutant League Hockey and Mutant League Football, where you played as mutants. They were, I think, for Genesis. I don't know if they were for Nintendo or Super Nintendo. And you were mutants. You had mutant powers, and you can, not like mutants, like X-Men mutants, like you're a girl that can throw fireworks or some shit, like mutants, like trauma mutants, like Toxic Avenger, like your body's always melting. And you could do cool shit, like you could kill the goalie in hockey and then just score and score and score. They're rad. They should remake those properly. Because that and NFL Blitz were the only sports games I was into. Ooh, need a beer. I like this game, I replied, keeping my eyes on the screen. Why do I like Jungle King so much? I think it's because I love swinging from vine to vine across the sky. You see, I'm a little chubby. Actually, I'm short and chubby. I'm built sort of like the Red Rhinos, and so I guess I like being able to swing so lightly to fly above the ground like a bird. Also, it's an awesome game. Joel and Eric don't like it because I always win. In our first game this afternoon, an alligator chewed Joel in half. I think that put him in a bad mood. Do you know what game I did? Wow. Apparently Joel's retarded, and it's not my reading. Do you know what game my dad bought me? Joel asked. Battle Solitaire. And I gotta explain this one for the kids, too. There used to be a game in the, ooh, I want to say early 90s, mid-90s for a PC that was, and they also, I think, had it on Super Nintendo. It was a chess game, and you'd play normal chess, but when you beat someone or took out a piece or whatever, it would show a, like, claymation animation of you beating the fuck out of a piece. So if a pawn took out a castle, it would be like a tiny pawn that jumped up all huge and butt-fucked the castle, and the castle, like, kind of liked it, but it still went off the board when it was done. I leaned closer to the screen. I had to get past the biggest quicksand pit. One slip, and I'd be sucked into the sandy slime. What kind of game is that? Eric asked Joel. It's a card game, Joel told him. You know, solitaire. Only the cards fight each other. Cool, Eric replied. It doesn't say sarcastically, but I'm assuming sarcastically. Hey guys, I'm in a tough spot here, I said. Give me a break, okay? I've got to concentrate. I'm right over the quicksand pit. But we don't want to play your bullshit game anymore, Eric complained. I grabbed a vine, swung hard, then reached for the next one. And someone bumped my shoulder. Ow! I saw a flash of red hair and knew it was Jessica. She bumped me again and giggled. I watched myself tumbling down on the screen, sucked into the bottomless slime pit. That'd be a good name for Jessica, am I right, listeners? Thwuck. 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 I died. I spun around angrily. Jessica!
My turn,
she grinned at me, her wide, toothy grin.
Now we have to start all over again, I announced.
No way, Eric protested. I'm going home.
Me too,
Joel said, pulling his baseball cap lower on his forehead.
One more game, I pleaded like every fat kid ever that totally wants everything his way and doesn't want to accommodate his friends, and we all knew that kid growing up. Maybe you were that kid growing up. Just make your friends happy. They're over at your house. Be accommodating, asshole. Get out some tequila.
Come on, Mark, let's go outside, Joel said, pointing to the bright sunshine pouring through the bedroom window.
Yeah, it's a great day out. Let's throw a frisbee or something,
Eric suggested. Or get our skateboards.
One more game, then we'll go outside, I insisted, trying to prolong my obesity.
I watched them head out the door. I really didn't want to leave the jungle. I don't know why I like jungles so much, but I've rarely been into jungle since I was a teeny kid.
It must have been a long time ago because he's so fucking fat.
I like to watch all the old jungle movies on TV. And when we were little, I used to pretend I was Tarzan's fat brother, King of the Jungle.
Or maybe Prince of the Jungle. It didn't say fat brother, but I added it.
Jessica always wanted to play too, so I let her be Cheetah, my talking chimpanzee. She was very good at it. But after she was 6 or 7, Jessica refused to be a chimp anymore. She became a full-time pest instead.
I'll play Jungle King with you, Mark, she offered after my two friends left, because I was a fucking terrible host.
No way, I replied, shaking my head. You just want to take a dive into the quicksand pit.
No, I'll play it right, she promised.
I'll try to win this time, really. I was about to let her play when the doorbell rang downstairs.
Is it Mom? Is she home? I asked, listening for her footsteps.
I think she's in the backyard, Jessica replied. So I hurried downstairs to answer the front door. Maybe Eric and Joel changed their minds, I thought. Maybe they've come back for another round of Jungle King. I pulled open the front door and stared at the grossest thing I had ever seen in my life.
Maybe it's a shirtless version of him. Let's read on and see.
Chapter number 2!
I stared at a head. A human head, wrinkly and leathery, about the size of a tennis ball.
That's not how it was on the cover.
The pale, dry lips were pulled back in a sneer. The neck was stitched closed with heavy black string. The eyes, solid black eyes, stared up at me. A shrunken head! A real shrunken head! I will check Giovanni's texts as soon as I'm done with this chapter. I was so shocked. So totally amazed to find it at my front door that it took me a long time to see the woman who was holding it. She was a tall woman, about my mom's age, maybe a little older. She had short black hair with streaks of gray in it. She wore a long raincoat buttoned to the top, even though it was a warm, sunny day. She smiled at me. I couldn't see her eyes. They were hidden behind large, black-framed sunglasses. She held the shrunken head by the hair. Thick, black hair. Her other hand held a small canvas suitcase.
Are you Mark?
She asked. She had a soft, smooth voice. No, she doesn't. Like someone in a TV commercial.
Yeah?
I replied, staring at the shrunken head. They never looked so ugly in photos I'd seen, so wrinkly and dry.
I hope I didn't startle you with this thing,
the woman said, smiling.
I was so eager to give it to you. I took it out of my bag.
Give it to me?
I asked, not taking my eyes off it. The head stared back at me with those glassy black eyes. They looked more like teddy bear eyes than human eyes.
Your Aunt Benna sent it for you,
the woman said.
As a present!
She held out the head to me, but I didn't take it. I had spent all day collecting shrunken heads in the game, but I wasn't sure I wanted to touch this one.
I spent all day looking at virtual boobs, but fuck no, I'm not gonna touch a real one. They're gross. They got cooties.
Mark? Who is here?
My mom stepped up behind me.
Oh, hello.
Hello!
The woman replied pleasantly.
Did Benno write to you and tell you I was coming? I'm Carolyn Hollings. I work with her on the island.
Oh, my goodness, my mom exclaimed. Benna's letters must have gotten lost. Come in, come in. She pulled me back so that Carolyn could enter the house. Look what she brought for me, Mom, I said with a weird pause in the middle of me and Mom. I pointed to the small green head dangling from Carolyn's hand. It's dangling from the hair, but it's dangling from the hair of the head, not the hair of Carolyn's hand, though I don't doubt her hands being disgustingly hairy. Yuck! Mom cried, raising a hand to her cheek. That isn't real, is it? Of course it's real, I cried. Aunt Benno wouldn't send a fake, would she? Carolyn stepped into the living room and set down her small suitcase. I took a deep breath, worked up my courage and reached for the shrunken head. But before I could take it, Jessica swooped in and grabbed it out of Carolyn's hand. Hey! I shouted, reaching for her. She darted away, giggling, her red hair flying behind her, holding the head in both hands. But then she stopped. Her smile faded, and she stared down at the head in horror. It bit me, Jessica cried. It bit me. Chapter number motherfucking 3, yeah. I gasped. Mom squeezed my shoulder. Jessica started to giggle. One of her dumb jokes. Nah. She tossed the head from hand to hand and side to side and licked the balls and grinned at me. You're dumb, Mark. You'll believe anything. Ah, just give me back some head, I cried angrily. I dove across the living room and grabbed for it. She started to pull away, but I held on tightly. Hey, you scratched it, I shrieked. She did. I held the head up close to my face and examined it. Jessica had scratched a long white line on the right earlobe. Jessica, please, Mom begged, crossing her arms and lowering her voice. That's what Mom does when she's about to get steamed. Shape up. We have a guest. Jessica crossed her arms and pouted back to Mom. Mom turned to Carolyn. How is my sister Benna doing? Carolyn pulled off her sunglasses. Yeah! And tucked them into a raincoat pocket. She had silvery gray eyes. Fucking badass. She looked older without the dark glasses on. I could see hundreds of tiny wrinkles at the corner of her eyes.
Benna is fine, she replied. Working hard. Too hard. Sometimes she disappears into the jungle for days.
Carolyn sighed and started to unbutton her raincoat.
I'm sure you know Benna's work is her life, she continued. She spends every minute exploring the jungles of Belladora.
That's not a typo. It actually wasn't Belladonna.
She wanted to come visit, but she couldn't leave the island, so she sent me instead.
Well, it's very nice to meet you, Carolyn, Mom said warmly. I'm sorry we didn't know you were coming, but any friend of Benna's is more than welcome. She took Carolyn's raincoat. Carolyn wore khaki pants and a short-sleeve khaki shirt like she worked at the motherfucking San Diego Zoo. It looked like a real jungle-exploring suit. Come sit down, Mom told her. What can I offer you?
A cup of coffee would be nice,
Carolyn replied. She started to follow Mom to the kitchen, but she stopped and smiled at me.
Do you like your present?
I gazed down at the wrinkled, leathery head in my hands. It's beautiful, I declared. Oh, I think that's a drinking break. That night before bed, I placed the head on my dresser, right next to the gist sock like that was on the cover. I brushed its thick black hair straight back, like some sort of Japanese greaser. The forehead was dark green and wrinkled like a prune. The glassy black eyes stared straight ahead. Carolyn told me that the head was over 100 years old! I leaned against the dresser and stared at it. It's kind of weird to have a piece of a human being that, still has, great-grandchildren alive?
It was so hard to believe that it once belonged to a real person.
Yuck!
I have a kneecap that belonged to a real person. I bought that. I'm just slowly buying pieces because I'm too poor to get a real slave. How had the guy lost his head, I wondered. And who decided to shrink it? And who kept it after it was shrunk? I wished Aunt Benna was here. She would explain everything to me. Carolyn was sleeping in the guest room down the hall. We had sat in the living room talking about Aunt Benna all night. Carolyn described the work of Aunt Benna and what she was doing on the jungle island and the amazing things she was finding there on Baladora. My Aunt Benna is a pretty famous scientist. This is the second goddamn book in a row with famous scientists. Scientists aren't famous. Fucking reality show people that suck dick are famous. No one cares about science. Who's that black science guy? Don't even answer that. Fuck that guy. She has been on Baladora for nearly 10 years. She studies the animals in the jungle and the plant life too, 420. I loved listening to Carolyn's stories. It was as if my Jungle King computer game had come to life. Jessica kept wanting to play with my shrunken head, but I wouldn't let her. She had already put a scratch on its ear. It's not a toy. It's a human head, I told my sister. I'll trade you two of my koosh balls for it, Jessica offered. For also kids listening don't remember, a koosh ball had a bunch of little rubber balls that stretched out on a rubber ball in the middle. Not rubber ball, rubber tentacles. It was like a bunch of cut up rubber bands that were round attached to a rubber ball. And some of them, they put eyes and stuff on them. It was huge when this book came out. No one knows why. Was she crazy? Why would I trade a valuable treasure like this for two fucking koosh balls? Yeah, she can shove them right up her koosh hole. Sometimes I worried about Jessica. At 10 o'clock, Mom sent me up to my room. Carolyn and I have some things to talk about, she announced. I said goodnight and made my way upstairs. I placed the shrunken head on my dresser and changed into my pajamas. The dark eyes in the head appeared to flash for a second when I turned out the lights. I climbed into bed and pulled up the covers. Silvery moonlight washed into the room from the bedroom window. In the bright moonlight, I could see the head clearly, staring at me from the dresser top, bathed in shadows. What a horrible sneer on its face, I thought with a shiver. Why is it locked in such a frightening expression? I answered my own question. You wouldn't smile either, Mark, if someone shrunk your fucking head. I fell asleep staring at the little, ugly head. I slept heavily without any dreams. I don't know how long I slept, but sometime in the middle of the night, I was awakened by a terrifying whisper. Mark. Mark. Damn, I guess that second one wasn't really a whisper.
Chapter number 4.
Mark. Mark. The eerie whisper grew louder. I sat straight up, and my eyes shot open, and in the heavy darkness, I saw Jessica standing beside my bed. Mark, Mark, she whispered, tugging my pajama sleeve. I swallowed hard, my heart pounding.
Huh? You? What's your problem?
I had a bad dream, she stammered, and I fell out of bed. Oh, God, I remember, I think I told the story in the pod, whatever. I remember when I first started shaving, I was up later than everyone in my house shaving when I was like 13 or something like that. My brother's room was next to the bathroom, and I cut my neck bad, and there's like blood dripping down like I was some sort of Cenobite. And then, by the way, I really want to rewatch Hellraiser. That's why I'm on the weird Cenobite referencing tip. Trip. Kick. That's what I wanted. And I just remember waking up my brother like, Brandon! Brandon! Hey, how do I stop this massive amount of bleeding? And that's why I stopped shaving. That's not true at all. I still shave my neck sometimes. Jessica falls out of bed at least once a week. Mom says she's going to build a tall fence around Jessica's bed to keep her in, or else buy her a king-size bed like old Dune has. But I think Jessica would just roll around even harder in a big bed and still fall out. My sister is a pest, even in her sleep. Don't be a dick, dude. Clearly she's disturbed by something. Jesus.
I need a drink of water,
she whispered, still tugging my sleeve. I groaned and pulled my arm away.
Well, go downstairs and get it, you dumb bitch. You're not a baby,
I growled.
I'm scared.
She grabbed my hand and pulled.
You have to come with me.
Jessica, I started to protest, but why bother? Whenever Jessica has a scary dream, I end up taking her downstairs for a glass of water. Good, be a good fucking brother. I climbed out of bed and led the way to the door. We'd both stopped in front of the dresser. The shrunken head stared out at us in the darkness.
I think that head gave me bad dreams, Jessica whispered softly.
Don't blame the head, I replied, yawning.
You've had bad dreams just about every night, remember? It's because you have a sick mind.
Do not, she cried angrily. She punched my shoulder, hard. If you hit me, I won't get you a drink, I told her. She reached out a finger and poked the shrunken head on one of its wrinkled cheeks.
Yuck, it feels like leather. It doesn't feel like skin.
What do you think leather is, bitch? Oh, wait, that's not what it says at all, sorry. I guess heads get hard when you shrink them, I said, straightening the thick tuft of black hair. You want to see how to make my head hard? Oh, it doesn't say that either. What the fuck?
Why did Aunt Benna send you a shrunken head and not send me one? Jessica asked.
I shrugged. Beats me. We tiptoed out into the hall and turned toward the stairs.
Maybe it's because Aunt Benna doesn't remember you. The last time she visited us, you were just a baby.
I was only 4.
Aunt Benna remembers me, Jessica replied.
She loves to argue.
Well, maybe she thinks that girls don't like shrunken heads, I said.
We made our way down to the kitchen.
The stairs squeaked under our feet.
Girls like shrunken heads, Jessica argued. I know I do. They're cool as shit. I filled a glass with water and handed it to her. She made gulping sounds as she drank.
You'll share your head with me, right? She asked.
No way, I told her.
How do you share a head?
I have seen many a video that teaches this. We made our way back upstairs in the darkness. I took her to her room and tucked her in.
Then I crept back to my room and I slipped back into bed.
I yawned and pulled the covers up to my chin. I shut my eyes, but opened them again quickly.
What was that yellow light across the room?
Aliens. At first, I thought someone had turned on the hall light, but squinting across the room, I saw that it wasn't light. The head. The shrunken head, it was growing.
Wow!
That was the most racist speech fuck-up impediment. God damn it! Brain work! It was glowing. The head was glowing. It wasn't growing. I'm an asshole and a racist. Get that drop. As if bright flames surrounded it, a shimmering yellow glow. And in the glow, I saw the dark eyes gleam and sparkle. And then the lips, the thin, dry lips that had been set in a hard scowl, the lips began to twitch, and the mouth pulled up in a horrifying smile.
Chapter number 5. No!
I let out a terrified wail. Glowing brightly, surrounded by eerie yellow light, the head grinned at me, its dark eyes flashing. My hands thrashed at the covers. I struggled to pull myself out of bed.
Franklin, come here. Come on up. Come on. Come on. Good boy.
All right, Franklin's on my lap. Don't worry.
But my legs tangled in the blanket, and I fell with a hard thud to the floor.
Don't kiss my mouth while I'm trying to record.
No! I cried. My body trembled so hard I could barely scramble to my feet.
Gazing up, I saw the grinning head floating over the dresser.
Float into the air, float toward me like a glowing comet.
No! Don't all comets glow, or no? Maybe it's just reflection of light. Disregard that. I don't know about comments.
No!
I covered my face to shield myself. When I glanced back up, the shrunken head glowed on the dresser top. had I imagined it floating? All right, I'm done with that beer. Don't worry, I have another one. Let me start this one. Jessica jumped out as I ran past her bedroom. "Mark, what's going on?" she called. I didn't stop to answer. I kept running down the hall to Mom and Dad's room. "The head!" I wailed. "The head!" I was so terrified. I didn't know what I was doing. Oh, God, what a little bitch. It's going to be terrible for his parents if he ever has a wet dream comes in his pants. There we go. The door was closed, but I shoved it open without knocking. Mom was lying on her back on her side of the bed. My dad was slunched on top of her, pounding away. Oh, sorry, he was actually away this week on a business trip. But Mom still slept on her side of the bed. As I burst in, she sat up and uttered a startled cry. "Mark!" I ran beside her. "Mom, the shrunken head, it started to glow!" I cried, my voice high and shrill. "It's glowing, and it grinned at me." Why doesn't he have any strong lead characters? I think he does, but they're all female to prove a point that girls can do it too. And guys are all bitches. Like RL himself, look at that man. Man, I should not leave my phone on there. It's like an amplifier. "Mark, you had a nightmare," Mom said softly. She ran her hand over the back of my hair. "The way we used to do when I was little." "But Mom..." "That's all it was, a nightmare. Take a deep breath. Look how you're shaking." Sorry, I was trying to look at the cats crawling on the boxes in this room. Yoda, you're out. Franklin, you're still on my lap. And Scarlett's over there on the couch. All right, we're good. I pulled her away. I knew it wasn't a nightmare. I'd been wide awake. "Come and see," I insisted. "Hurry." I pulled her out into the hall. A light clicked on in Carolyn's room, and her door swung open. "What's happening?" she asked sleepily. She was wearing a long black nightshirt. Growl. "Mark says his shrunken head is glowing," Mom reported. "I think we had a bad dream." Or he. I didn't. The only bad dream I had was when I realized I have to take care of this kid for like fucking 6 more years. Fucking scumbag. Don't parents have to take care of their kids now just forever? Just indefinitely? Or at least to the, like, 30? That's terrible. "No, I didn't!" I shouted angrily. "Come on, I'll show you!" I started to pull Mom down the hall, but I stopped when I saw the intense expression on Carolyn's face. She had been sleepy a second ago, but now her eyes were wide, and she was staring at me hard, staring at my face, studying me. I'd like the listener to take note once again that Carolyn showed up without her, you know, the aunt having a letter that went here. We don't know who Carolyn is. This is creepy. I turned away from her and nearly bumped into Jessica. "Why did you wake me up?" Jessica demanded. I pushed past her and led everyone down the hall to my room. "The head glowed," I cried, "and it smiled at me. Look, you'll see." I burst into my room and strode up to the dresser. The head was gone. Chapter number 6. I stared in shock at the bare dresser top. Behind me, someone clicked on the bedroom light. I blinked in the bright light, expecting the shrunken head to appear. Where was that bitch? My eyes searched the floor. Had it fallen and rolled away? Had it floated out of the room? Wingardium Leviosa! "Mark, is this some kind of joke?" Mom asked. She suddenly sounded very tired. "No," I started. "Really, Mom? The head?" And then I saw the sly grin on Jessica's face. And I saw that my sister had both hands behind her back. "Jessica, what are you hiding?" I demanded. I also demanded that Dune drink a beer, and he complied. Her grin grew wider. She never could keep a straight face.
"Nothing,"
she lied. "Let me see your hands," I said sharply.
"No way,"
she replied. But she burst out laughing and brought her hands in front of her, and of course she had the shrunken head gripped tightly in her hand.
"Jessica!"
I let out an angry cry and snatched it away from her.
"It's not a toy,
I scolded her like a bitch.
You keep your paws off it here.
Well, it wasn't glowing, she sneered, and it wasn't smiling either. You made it all up, Mark.
Did not,
I cried. I examined the head. Its dry lips were pulled back in a toothless snarl. It always had. The skin was green and leathery, not glowing at all.
Mark, you had a bad dream,
Mom insisted, covering her mouth as she yawned.
Put the head down and let's all get some sleep.
Okay, okay, I muttered like Gigi. I flashed Jessica another angry look. Then I set the shrunken head down on the dresser. Mom and Jessica walked out of my room.
Mark is such a jerk,
I heard Jessica say, just loud enough for me to hear.
I asked him to share the shrunken head, and he said he wouldn't.
We'll talk about it in the fucking morning, Mom replied, yawning again. It's shit like Goosebumps books that makes me apprehensive to be a parent. Where I'm just like, these kids are into a lot of retarded escapades. And they think everything they do is really important. But I fucking love sleeping, and I hate being woken up in the middle of the night to deal with shit. Oh, one of the pets is puking is not nearly as bad as, Mom, there was a shrunken head in my room and it was glowing and floating, but it's clearly not. My sister took it. No, will you stay up with me?
I don't know. I don't know if I could deal with it. Especially because I had to stop drinking caffeine due to these goddamn migraines.
I started to turn off the light, but I stopped when I saw Carolyn still standing in the hall. Still staring hard at me, a really intense expression on her face. She narrowed her silvery eyes at me.
Did you see it glow, Mark?
She asked softly. I glanced at the head, dark and still. Yeah, I did, I replied. Carolyn nodded. She seemed to be thinking hard about something.
Good night,
she murmured. Then she turned and padded silently back into the guest room. The next morning, Mom and Carolyn greeted me with the biggest surprise of my life.
Surprise! Dad's not really coming home. He moved away forever because your penis is so small. Have fun dealing with that.
Chapter number
7.
Your Aunt Benna wants you to come visit her in the jungle, Mom announced at breakfast. I dropped the spoon into my Fruit Loops brand cereal. My mouth fell open to my knees, much like Mom's saggy tits. Excuse me? Mom and Carolyn grinned at me. I guess they enjoyed shocking me.
That's why Carolyn came, Mom explained, to take you back with her to
Banadora.
Why didn't you tell me? I shrieked.
We didn't want to tell you until we worked out all the details, Mom replied. Are you excited? You get to visit a real jungle.
Excited isn't the word, I exclaimed. I don't know what I am!
They both laughed. All right, it's official. I need to do this guy's voice as a gay voice the entire time after that one.
I get to go too,
Jessica declared, bouncing into the kitchen. I let out a groan. No, Jessica, you can't go this time, Mom said, putting a hand on my sister's shoulder. This is Mark's turn.
That isn't fair, Jessica wailed, shoving Mom's hand away.
Yes, it is, I replied happily.
Kali-a,
I cheered. Then I leaped to my feet and did a celebration dance around the kitchen table. Yep. Definitely feel confident about going with this voice. If you're offended, you can shoot an email to GiovanniG@AdamCarolla.com.
Not fair, not fair, Jessica chanted.
Jessica, you don't even like jungles, I reminded her.
Yes, I do.
Next time will be your turn,
Carolyn said, taking a long sip of coffee.
I'm sure your aunt would love to show you the jungle, Jessica.
Yeah, when you're older, I sneered.
You know, the jungle is too dangerous for a kid.
Of course, when I said that to my sister, I had no idea of just how fucking dangerous the jungle could be. No idea that I was heading out to make love to a monkey and bring AIDS back to the United States.
Mission AIDS. Infection.
My head hurts from headbanging.
No idea that I was heading toward dangers I couldn't even imagine.
Hi, Yodi.
Drinking break.
After breakfast, Mom helped me pack my suitcase. I wanted to bring shorts and t-shirts. I knew it was hot in the jungle, but I still had to be figgity-iggity fashionable. But Carolyn insisted that I pack long-sleeve shirts and jeans because of all the scratchy weeds and vines we'd be walking through, and because of all the jungle insects.
You have to protect yourself from the sun,
Carolyn instructed, just like Dune's girlfriend did about his tattoos, and he doesn't ever, so now they're going to be faded, but then she'll just touch him up for free, because that's what she does for a living, and that's a good situation, and I love her.
Maradora!
It's so close to the equator! The sun is very strong, and the temperature stays in the 90s all day, just like it did for Dune when everyone else had winter.
Of course, I carefully packed the shrunken head. I didn't want Jessica to get her paws on that bitch while I was away. I know. Sometimes I'm pretty mean to my sister. But I don't like women, just as my new voice implies. As we drove to the airport, I thought about poor Jessica staying home while I went off to exciting adventures with Aunt Benna. I decided to bring her back a really cool souvenir from the jungle. Some poison ivy, maybe. Or some kind of poisonous snake!
Or AIDS.
At the airport, Mom kept hugging me and telling me to be careful. Then she hugged me some more. It was really pretty embarrassing.
Oh, it's so embarrassing to have a mom that loves you, that isn't upset about your shot glass tattoo on your wrist.
Finally, it came time for Carolyn and me to board the plane. I felt scared and excited and glad. But that's just 1D, not G-L-A-D-D, and worried all at once. Be sure to send postcards, Mom called as I followed Carolyn to the gate.
If I can find a mailbox,
I called back. I didn't think they had mailboxes in the jungle.
Ooh, another drinking break.
The flight was long as a motherfucker. So long, they showed 3 movies in a row! Carolyn spent a lot of time reading through her notebooks and papers, but when the flight attendant served dinner, she took a break, and she told me about the work Aunt Benna had been doing in the jungle. Making beautiful love to her, am I right? Because girls that wear that khaki and stuff, there's a lot of gay jokes in this one.
Hey, if you're gay and you're offended by this, it gets better. It gets better. If you're straight, it just gets worse. Just lots of stress.
Carolyn said that Aunt Benna had made many exciting discoveries. She discovered 2 kinds of plants that no one had ever seen before.
The only 2 kinds of plants I know about are indicas and sativas.
One is a kind of crawling vine that she named after herself, like a pretentious cunt. Benna lepticus, or something like that. Carolyn said that Aunt Benna was exploring parts of the jungle where no one had ever gone, and that she was turning up all kinds of jungle secrets. Secrets that will make Aunt Benna famous when she decides to announce them.
When was the last time you visited your aunt? No, never mind, that's not what I said. When was the last time your aunt visited you?
Carolyn asked like a reary. She struggled to pull open the plastic wrapping around her silverware.
A long time ago, I told her.
I can hardly remember what Aunt Benna looks like, only that her fashion sense was drab. I was only 4 or 5. Carolyn nodded.
Did she give you any special presents?
She asked. She pulled out the plastic knife and started to spread butter on her dinner roll. I scrunched up my face, thinking hard.
Special presents?
Did she bring you anything from the jungle when she visited you?
Carolyn asked. She lowered the dinner roll to the tray and turned to me. She had her dark glasses on again like a junkie, so I couldn't see her eyes. But I had the feeling she was staring at me, studying me.
I don't remember, I replied.
I know she didn't bring me anything as cool as a shrunken head. That head is really fabulous. Carolyn didn't smile. She turned back to her food tray. I could tell she was thinking hard about something. I fell asleep after dinner. We flew all night and landed in Southeast Asia. We arrived just after dawn. The sky outside the airplane window was a deep purple. A beautiful color I'd never seen before. A big red sun rose slowly through the purple.
We change planes here,
Carolyn announced.
A huge jet like this could never land in
Balladora.
We have to take a tiny plane from here.
The plane was tiny for sure. It looked like a toy. It looked like that toy plane that the airline tweeted out and going in the girl's vagina. It looked like that one. It was painted a red dull. A dull red. It had two red propellers on the slender wings. I searched for the rubber bands that made the propeller spin.
That's not probably how they spun. They probably use engines.
Carolyn introduced me to the pilot. He was a young man in a red and yellow Hawaiian shirt and khaki shorts, dressed surprisingly like Dune. Uh-oh, I hope he isn't drunk like Dune, because they're about to die in a plane crash. Malaysia. He had slicked down black hair and a black mustache. His name was Ernesto.
Can this thing fly?
I asked him. He grinned at me from beneath the mustache.
I hope so,
he replied, chuckling. He helped us up metal steps in the cabin. Then he hoisted himself into the cockpit. Carolyn and I filled the cabin. There was only room for two of us back there and no room for cockpit jokes, Dune decided. When Ernesto started the engine, it chugged and sputtered like a power mower starting up. The propellers began to twirl. The engine roared so loud I couldn't hear what Ernesto was shouting to us. Finally, I figured out that he was telling us to fasten our fucking seatbelts. I swallowed hard and stared out the tiny window. Ernesto backed the plane out of the hangar. The roar was so loud I wanted to cover my ears. This was going to be exciting, I thought. It's kind of like flying inside a kite.
Right, Yodi? Come here, Yodi. You need to go, but you can't stand on the keyboard. Do you understand what I'm saying? No, do not climb on my shoulder, you're too fat. Yeah, get down. Sorry.
A few minutes later, we were in the air, flying low over the blue-green ocean. The bright morning sunlight made the water spigety sparkle. The plane bumped and jerked and grinded and swerved and twerked and did all sorts of dance moves. I could feel the wind blowing it, making us bounce, bounce, bounce. After a while, Carolyn pointed out the islands down below. They were mostly green with ribbons of yellow sand around them.
Those are all jungle islands, Carolyn told me. See that one?
She pointed to a large, egg-shaped island.
Some people found buried pirates' treasure on that island. Gold and jewels worth millions of dollars.
Cool, I exclaimed.
Every time they find gold and jewels in the ships, it just goes back to the government and stuff that originally owned them. And then it's all bullshit, and you're like, fuck that, I don't even want to look for buried treasure.
Ernesto leaned over the throttle and brought the plane lower. So low, I could clearly make out trees and shrubs. The trees all seemed tangled together. I couldn't see any roads or paths. The ocean water darkened to a deep green. The engine roared as the plane bounced against strong winds.
That's Balladora!
Up ahead!
Carolyn announced in her new voice. She pointed out the window as another island came into view.
Balladora
was larger than the other islands and very jagged. It curved like a crescent moon and nothing like a Pillsbury crescent roll, even though I could eat 40 of those. But then I'd die and be morbidly obese, and I don't know which one's worse.
I can't believe that Aunt Bella is down there somewhere, I exclaimed.
Carolyn smiled beneath her dark glasses.
She's there, okay.
I glanced to the front as Ernesto turned in his seat to face us. I saw instantly he had a troubled expression on his face.
We have a little time.
Oh, wait, we have a little problem,
he said, shouting over the roar of the engine. Dune wondered where he got the word time from.
Problem?
Carolyn asked. Ernesto nodded grimly.
Yes, a problem. You see, I don't know how to land this thing. You two will have to jump.
Panic made me gasp.
Apparently I didn't have my hitchhiker's guide with me, right? No?
But, I said a what, but, I sputtered. We don't have parachutes.
Ernesto shrugged.
Try to land on something soft, eh, cabron?
He said.
Chapter number 8. I'm doing too many voices now. It's gonna be confusing and it's hard to make jokes. Chapter 8, yeah!
My mouth dropped open. My breath caught in my chest. That's where it normally catches in your fucking lungs, asshole. Both hands gripped the arms of my seat. Then I saw the smile on Carolyn's face. She shook her head, her eyes on Ernesto.
Mark is too smart for you,
she told him.
He's not going to fall for a dumb joke like that.
Ernesto laughed. He narrowed his eyes at me.
You believed me, right?
No
way, I choked out. My knees were still shaking.
I knew you were kidding,
I lied.
Kind of.
Yoda! God damn it, fucking cats.
Come here. You, down, out, whatever fucking word you understand.
Carolyn and Ernesto both laughed.
You're mean. You're mean, she told Ernesto.
Ernesto's eyes flashed. His smile faded.
Just got to get used to thinking fast in the jungle,
he warned, somehow morphing into my gay voice. He turned back to the controls. I kept my eyes out the window, watching the island of Baradora sweeping beneath us. Broad-winged white birds swooped over the tangled green trees. I read that sentence while putting one hand out with my palm up, straight from my chest, and then, like, rotated out to the side. As if I was like,
there's more to see than can ever be seen.
And in reality, there's no reason to do that. No one's watching, and all I'm trying to do is stop fucking cats. A short strip of land had been cleared near the south shore of the island. Beyond it, I could see ocean waves smacking against dark rocks. I get it, Dryer, you're done. The little plane hit hard as we landed, hard enough to make my knees bounce in the air. We bounced again on the bumpy dirt landing strip. Then we rolled to a stop. Ernesto cut the engine. He pushed open the cabin door. Then he helped us out of the plane. We had to duck our heads. Ernesto carried our suitcases out. Carolyn had her small canvas bag. My suitcase was a little larger. He set them down on the landing strip.
Oh, the actual plane landing strip, not Carolyn's pubes.
And gave us a short, two-fingered salute. Then he climbed back into the little red plane and pulled the door closed behind him. I shut my eyes as the propellers whirred, showering sand over me. A few seconds later, Ernesto took off. Dune was glad he didn't have to do that voice anymore because he was terrible at it. The plane nosed up steeply, just barely making it over the trees at the end of the landing strip. The plane turned sharply and headed back over the water. Carolyn and I picked up our bags.
Where do we go now?
I asked, squinting in the bright sunlight. Carolyn pointed. A clearing of tall grass stretched beyond the narrow dirt airstrip. At the edge of the clearing where the trees started, I could see a row of low, gray buildings. The kind that they have at poor people's schools.
That's our headquarters?
Carolyn told me in a terrible voice.
We built the airstrips right next to it. The rest of the island is jungle. No roads, no other houses, just wilderness.
Do you get cable?
I asked. She stopped short, then laughed. I don't think she expected me to make a joke.
Probably because you didn't make one on the entire fucking 8-hour flight, douchefag.
We carried our suitcases toward the low, gray buildings. The morning sun was still low in the sky, but the air was already hot and wet. Hundreds of tiny white insects, some kind of gnat, hovered over the tall grass, darting one way and then the other.
You know how fucking gnats dart and shit.
I heard shrill buzzing, and somewhere in the distance, the cry of a bird, followed by a long, sad reply.
Cooper!
I guess I'm just gonna kill myself.
That was the sad reply of the other bird. Carolyn walked quickly, taking long strides over the tall grass, ignoring the darting white gnats. I jogged to keep up with her. Sweat ran down my forehead and presumably my taint. The back of my neck started to itch. Why was Carolyn in such a hurry?
We're kind of trapped here, right?
I said, studying the low, twisted trees beyond the small headquarter buildings.
I mean, how do we get off the island when we're finished?
We radio for Ernesto,
Carolyn replied, not slowing her pace.
It takes him about an hour to get here from the mainland.
That made me feel a little better. I scurried over the tall grass where one would find Pokemans, struggling to keep up with Carolyn. My suitcase began to feel heavy. I wiped sweat from my eyes with my free hand. We were nearing the headquarters. I expected Aunt Benna to come running out to greet me, but I couldn't see any sign of fucking anybody. A radio antenna was perched off to the side. The low buildings were perfectly square. Flat-roofed, they looked like upside-down cartons. Square windows had been cut in each wall.
What is that stretched over all the windows?
I asked Carolyn.
Mosquito netting,
she replied, turning. She turned back to me.
Have you ever seen a mosquito as big as your head?
I laughed.
No.
Well, you fucking will.
I laughed again. She was joking, right? I stepped up to the first building, the largest in the row. I set down my suitcases and pulled off my baseball cap. If it was the cap Dune often wears, it would be the 2014 NBA All-Star Game hat designed in part by fucking Birdman of Cash Money Records, you know what I'm saying?
Because that's the hat I have. I bought it for way too much money. That's why you shouldn't... No, never mind.
And mopped my forehead with my shirtless sleeve. Wow, it was hot. When I started cutting myself out there for the sake of being fully honest, I was about to be like, that's why you should donate to the show. Then I was like, you know what? If I don't get donations pretty soon, I'm just going to quit. So fuck it. You probably should. Because it's not worthwhile. A screen door led into the building. Carolyn held it open for me.
Aunt Benna!
I cried eagerly, leaving the suitcase on the ground. I ran inside. Aunt Benna? That was two of the Mijos. The sunlight filtered through the netting over the window. It took a few seconds for my eyes to adjust to the darker light. Can light be dark? I saw a table cluttered with test tubes and other equipment. I saw a bookshelf filled with notebooks and books.
Aunt Benna?
Then I saw her, wearing a white lab coat, standing with her back to me at a sink against the wall. She turned, wiping her hands on a towel. No, not Aunt Benna. A man. A white-haired man in a lab coat. His hair was thick and brushed straight back. Even in the dim light, I could see the pale blue of his eyes, blue as the sky. Such strange eyes. They looked like blue glass, like marbles. That's how I hope to look when I'm old, with just thick hair that's all gray. So far, so good. Not balding at all and going gray on the sides.
Looking like Morrissey.
He smiled. Not at me. He was smiling at Carolyn. He motioned to me by tilting his head. Does he have it? Asked Carolyn. He had a scratchy, hoarse voice that Dune is not going to do. Dear God, Cat, didn't I just pull you down from there?
Stop. Go. God, you're fat.
But I love you, Yoda.
Carolyn nodded.
Yes, he has it.
I could see that she was breathing hard. Short, shallow breaths. Was she excited? Nervous? Other emotions? I smile. Error. That was the weird A. A smile across.
Dear God, Yoda, please just get down.
A smile across the man's face. His blue eyes appeared to twinkle. That meant a lot to me, as I was a twink. Hi, I said awkwardly. I felt really confused. What did that question mean? What did I have?
Where's my Aunt Benna?
I asked.
Before he could answer, a girl appeared from the back room. She had straight blonde hair and the same pale blue eyes. She was dressed in a white t-shirt and white tennis shorts. She appeared to be about my age. That's my daughter, Karine. Karine? K-A-R-E-E-N. I'm gonna look this up. Karine. I'm gonna say Karine, the man said in a hoarse voice, more like a whisper. I am Dr. Hollings. He turned to Karine. This is Benna's nephew, Mark.
Tell me something I don't know,
Karine replied, sharply rolling her eyes. She turned to me.
Hey, Mark.
Hi, I replied, still confused. Karine flipped her blonde hair back over the shoulders of her t-shirt.
What grade are you in?
Sex. This is getting fucking confusing, I told her.
Me too, except I'm not in school this term. I'm in this dump.
She frowned at her father. Where's my aunt? I asked Dr. Hollings. Is she working or something? I thought she'd be here, you know, when I arrived. Dr. Hollings stared at me with those strange blue eyes. It took him a long time to reply. Finally, he said, Brenna isn't here. Excuse me? I wasn't sure I'd heard him correctly. It was hard to understand his raspy voice. Is she, working? We don't know, he replied. Karine played with a strand of her hair. She twisted it around her fingers, staring at me. This indicated that she was easy and totally down to fuck. Carolyn stepped behind the lab table and leaned her elbows on it. She rested her head in her hands.
Your Aunt Benna is missing, she said.
Her words made my head spin. Woo, woo, woo. I did the Will Smith at the beginning of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air when he knocks at the door. They were so unexpected, and she said them so flatly without any feeling at all. She's missing?
She's been missing for weeks, Karine said, glancing at her father. The three of us, we've been trying really hard to find her.
I don't understand, I stammered, shoving my hands into my jean pockets and playing with my dingle like I always do when I'm nervous.
Your aunt is lost in the jungle, Dr. Hollings explained.
But Carolyn said,
I started. Dr. Hollings raised a hand to silence me.
Your aunt is lost in the jungle, Mark.
But why didn't you tell my mom? I asked, confused.
We didn't want to worry her, Dr. Hollings replied. Benna's your mom's sister after all, so Carolyn brought you here because you can help us find her.
Huh?
My mouth dropped open in shock
and in anticipation.
Me? How could I help?
Dr. Hollings stepped across the small room toward me, his eyes locked on mine.
You can help us, Mark, he said in his hoarse whisper. You can help us find Benna, because you have jungle magic.
It's going to be so confusing trying to do voices in the next chapter, because in the meantime I'm going to go down and fold some laundry. Oh dear God. Fuck, that was a weird error it just had. Let's hope it doesn't do it again. I got another Negro Modelo, and I got Franklin on my lap begging to be pet. And we're on to chapter number 9.
I have what?
I stared at Dr. Hollings. I didn't know what he was talking about. Was jungle magic some kind of computer game? Was it like Jungle King? Everything isn't a computer game, asshole. Why did he think I had it?
You have jungle magic,
he repeated, staring back at me with those amazing blue eyes.
Let me explain.
Daddy, give Mark a break,
Karine interrupted.
He's been flying for 100 hours. He must be wrecked.
I do get wrecked if I have to fly any distance, but that's me and my addiction issues. I shrugged.
Yeah, I'm a little tired. Come sit down, Carolyn said.
She led me over to a tall stool beside the table. Then she turned to Karine.
Do we have any cokes left?
If there was no F to
F, it would be much more appealing. Corrine pulled open a small refrigerator against the back wall.
A few,
she replied, bending down to get to the bottom shelf.
Ernesto is supposed to bring another carton on his next flight.
Corrine brought me a can of Coke. I popped it open and I was sweating.
Whew!
And tilted the can to my mouth. The cold liquid felt so good on my hot, dry throat. God, if there's only something I could put on my throat and make it feel better. Corrine leaned against the table, close to me.
Have you ever been to the jungle before?
I swallowed more Coke. No, not really. But I've seen a lot of jungle movies. Corrine laughed.
It's not like the movies. I mean, there aren't herds of gazelles and elephants gathering at the waterhole. At least not in Baladora.
What animals are on the island? I asked.
Mosquitoes, mostly,
Corrine answered.
There are some beautiful red birds,
Carolyn said.
Called scarlet abysses. You won't believe their color. Kind of like flamingos, only brighter.
Dr. Hollings had been studying me the whole time. He walked over to the table and dropped down on a stool across from me. I held the cold soda against my hot forehead. Then I lowered it to the table.
Tell me about my Aunt Benna, I said to him. God, these voices are fucking me up.
Not much to tell,
Dr. Hollings replied, frowning.
She was studying a new kind of tree snail somewhere on the end of the jungle. But one night, she didn't return.
We're very worried about her,
Carolyn said, twisting a strand of hair. She bit her lower lip.
Very worried. We searched and searched. Then we decided you could help us.
But how can I help? I demanded.
I told you I've never been to a jungle.
But you have jungle magic,
Carolyn replied.
Benna gave it to you. The last time she visited you, we read about it. It's in Benna's notebooks over there.
Carolyn pointed to a stack of black notebooks on the bookshelf against the wall. I gazed at them, thinking hard. I still didn't understand.
Aunt Benna gave me some kind of magic?
I asked. Dr. Howlings nodded.
Yes, she did. She was afraid the secret might fall into the wrong hands, so she gave it to you.
Don't you remember?
Carolyn asked.
I was so little, I told them.
I was only 4. I don't remember. I don't think she gave me anything. But she did,
Carolyn insisted.
We know you have jungle magic. We know you...
How?
I interrupted.
How do you know I have it?
Because you saw the shrunken head glow,
Carolyn replied. I'm going to drink a water. It's hard to make comments when there's 4 different voices going at once.
The head will only glow for people who have the magic. We read it in Benna's notebooks.
I swallowed hard. Clearly, I don't spit. My throat suddenly felt dry again. My heart began to race.
You're telling me I have some kind of magic powers?
I added in a tiny voice.
But I don't feel strange or anything. I've never done anything magic.
You have the magic, Dr. Hollings said softly. The magic is hundreds of years old. It belonged to the Olion people. They used to live on this island.
They were head shrinkers,
Carolyn added.
Hundreds of years ago, that head I brought you, it was a lion. We have uncovered many others.
But your aunt uncovered the secret of their ancient magic,
Dr. Hollings said,
and she gave it to you.
You've got to help us find her,
Corrine declared.
You've got to use the magic. We've got to find poor Benna before it's too late.
I'll try, I told them. But secretly, I thought, they're making a huge fucking mistake. Maybe they mixed me up with someone else. I don't have any jungle magic. I'm just a little fat shit. None at all. What the fuck am I gonna do?
Chapter number motherfucking 10.
I spent the day exploring the edge of the jungle with Kareem. We uncovered some amazing yellow spiders that were nearly as big as my fist. Kill the fuck out of them. And Kareem showed me a plant that can snap its leaves closed around an insect and keep it trapped for days until the plant has digested it all. Yep, kill the fuck out of those too, just to be safe. Pretty cool. We climbed low, smooth-barked trees. We sat in the tree limbs and talked. Kareem is okay, I think. She's very serious. She doesn't laugh a whole lot. And she doesn't like the jungle at all. Kareem's mom died when she was a little kid, probably because she was fucking around with giant yellow spiders and shit like an idiot. She wants to go back to New Jersey and live with her grandmother, but her father won't let her, because he's been to New Jersey and fuck that shithole. As I talked with her, I kept thinking about jungle magic, and I kept thinking about how, whatever it was, I didn't have it. Sure, I always liked jungle movies, and jungle books, and jungle games. I always thought jungles were really awesome. But that doesn't mean I had any special powers or anything. I'm not Jumanji. And now, Aunt Benna was missing, and her friends in Banadora were so desperate to find her they had brought me here. But what can I do? What? See? Remember when I was like, that bitch didn't write a letter? And then it turns out that bitch didn't write a letter. As I lay in bed that night, the questions didn't go away. I stared up at the low ceiling of the small wooden shack, wide awake. There were 6 or 7 flat roof shacks in a row behind the main building. We each had our own little shack to sleep and masturbate in. My little cabin had a narrow bed with a flat, lumpy mattress, a low bedside table where I placed my shrunken head, a small dresser with all the drawers stuck except the bottom one, a narrow closet just big enough for me to fit in because the homosexual, because he's gay. Good stuff, Dan. Just big enough for the clothes I'd brought, and a tiny bathroom in the back. Through the netting over the open window, I could hear the chirp of insects, and in the distance, I could hear a caw, 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 some kind of animal cry. How can I help find Aunt Benna? I wondered as I stared up at the dark ceiling and listened to the strange sounds. What can I do? I tried to remember her. I tried to remember her visit to my house when I was 4. I pictured a short, dark-haired woman, chubby, like me. A round, pink face. Intense, dark eyes. Franklin just growled when I said that, and it was rad.
Who are you growling at? Yoda? Don't growl at the cats.
I remember that she talked very fast. She had a sort of chirpy voice, and she always seemed excited, very enthusiastic. And I remembered nothing else. I didn't remember shit. That's all I could remember about my aunt. Did she give me jungle magic? No. I don't remember anything about that. What? I say aunt. I don't know why I just said aunt, but I say that all the time in Goosebumps. I mean, how do you give someone magic? I kept thinking about it and thinking about it. I struggled to remember more about her visit, but I couldn't remember. I knew that Carolyn and Dr. Hollings had made a terrible mistake. I'll tell them in the morning, I decided. I'll tell them that they got the wrong kid. A terrible mistake, a terrible mistake, the words kept repeating in my mind. I sat up. No way I could sleep. My brain wouldn't let me. I was wide the fuck awake. I decided to take a walk around the headquarters building, maybe explore back where the trees grew thick and the jungle started. I crept to the screen door and peered out. My little cabin stood at the end of the row. I could see the other cabins from my door, all dark. Kareem, Carolyn, and Dr. Hollings had gone to sleep. Caw! Caw! The strange cry repeated in the distance. A soft wind made the tall grass bend and shift. Clearly, it was a fart. The tree leaves rustled, making whispering sounds. I was wearing a long, baggy t-shirt pulled down over boxers. Good look. No need to get dressed, I decided. No one else is awake. Besides, I'll just take a very short walk. I slipped into my sandals. Now he's wearing a long shirt over boxers and sandals. That's a good look.
pushed open the screen door and stepped outside.
Caw, caw.
The cries sounded a little closer. The night air felt hot and wet, nearly as hot as during the day. A heavy dew had fallen, and my sandals slid over the damp, tall grass. The wet grass tickled my pickle and my feet through my sandals. I made my way past the silent, dark shacks. To my right, the trees bent and swayed, black shadows against a purpley sky. No moon, no stars tonight. Maybe taking a walk is a bad idea, I told myself. Maybe it's too dark. I need a flashlight, I realized. I remembered Carolyn's warning earlier when she showed me where I would sleep.
Never go out at night without a flashlight. At night.
That's actually what it says. Never go out at night without a flashlight. At night. She warned me. Oh, fuck. They did it right. God damn it. Stupid R.L. Stine being one step ahead of old Dune. I still like the time that people accused me of reading these previously. They think I put effort into things.
At night,
she warned me.
We are not in charge here. At night, this is the creature's world.
The back of the headquarters building loomed ahead of me. I decided to turn around, but before I could turn, I realized I wasn't alone. In the darkness, I caught a pair of eyes staring back at me. I gasped. A chill ran down my back. Staring hard through the purple night, I saw another pair of eyes, then another, and another. Dark eyes staring at me without moving, without blinking. Dark eyes on top of each other. I froze and I couldn't move. I knew that I was trapped. There were too many of them. Too fucking many.
Chapter number 11. This is the first time I've done a second take in months.
I did the second take because on the first line I started choking on the beer I chugged before recording, which I didn't learn anything from that lesson as I just did it again. And then Yoda the cat started climbing up where he shouldn't be right after that. And then I was like, really, am I going to put a pause here right after I choked? Of course not. Even though the pause wouldn't be nearly as long as this explanation. God, I ruined everything. My legs trembled. Chill after chill rolled down the back of my neck. As I stared at the eyes in pairs, eyes on top of eyes, as I stared at them, they began to glow, brighter and brighter, and in the golden light, I saw that these were not creature eyes, they were not animal eyes, these were human eyes. I stared at the glowing eyes of 100 shrunken heads, a pile of shrunken heads, just like when you're on the jungle cruise at Disneyland and they say, he's going to give you a great deal. He'll trade you 2 heads for just 1 of yours. All heaped together, eyes on top of eyes, heads like tight fists, mouths curled into snarls, or open in toothless horror. Heads on heads, dark and wrinkled and leathery, so terrifying in the cold, golden glow from their eyes. I uttered a choked cry, and I took off. My legs felt rubbery and weak, probably because I'm a fatty fat shit. My heart pounded in my chest, also because I'm a fatty fat shit. I ran around the headquarters building. The yellow glow faded slowly from my eyes. I ran as fast as I could, which probably wasn't that fast, because once again, yeah, fatty fat shit. To the front of the dark building, to the screen door, gasping for breath, as per usual. I pulled open the door and leaped inside. I pressed my back against the wall and waited for the eerie glow to fade completely, waited for my heart to stop racing, for my breathing to slow. After a minute or two, I felt a little calmer. Those heads, I wondered, why are they piled back there like that? I shook my own head hard. See, I added own, or else it should have done that. Trying to shake away the ugly picture of them. They were all people once, I realized. Hundreds of years ago, they were people, and now... I swallowed hard. My throat felt tight and dry. I started across the room to the refrigerator. I needed something cold to drink. You and me both. Let's have one together. I told myself. I bumped the edge of the lab table. My hand shot out and I knocked something over. I grabbed it before it rolled off the table, a flashlight. Hey, I cried out happily. I'm going to listen to Carolyn's advice from now on. I promised myself I'm never going out again without a flashlight. I pushed the button and a white beam of light swept over the floor. As I raised the flashlight, the light settled on the bookshelf against the wall. Aunt Benna's black notebooks flashed into view. A tall stack of them nearly filled the shelf. I moved quickly to the bookshelf. With my free hand, I pulled down the top notebook. It was heavier than I thought, and I almost dropped the fuck out of it. Cradling it in my chubby sausage arms, I carried it over to the lab table. I climbed onto the tall stool and opened it up. Maybe I can find answers in here, I thought. Maybe I can find the part where Aunt Benna talks about giving me jungle magic. Maybe I can find out why Dr. Hollings and Carolyn think I have it. I leaned over the notebook and aimed the light onto the pages. Then I began flipping through, page after page, squinting in the light. Luckily, my aunt has big, bold handwriting. Very clean and easy to read. The pages seemed to be organized by year. I kept flipping pages, scanning each page quickly, until I came to the year of her visit. My eyes rolled down over a long section about lizards. Some kind of tree lizards Aunt Benna was studying. Then she described a cave she had found, cut into the rocky shore at the side of the island. The cave, she wrote, had been lived in by the Oleans. Oleans? How did I say that before? Dune! Ah, it's me. Maybe 200 years ago, I skimmed over long lists of things Aunt Benna had found in the cave. Her handwriting got very jagged, very crooked. I guess she was very excited about her discovery. I turned several more pages and started a section marked Summer. As I read the words, my mouth dropped open, my eyes nearly bulged out of my head. Bagua? The words started to blur. I lowered the flashlight to the pages so that I could see better. I blinked several times. I didn't want to believe what I was reading. I didn't want to believe what Aunt Benna had written. But the words were there. And they were super fucking spooky.
Chapter 12, which is probably the age of consent on this godforsaken jungle island.
The flashlight shook in my hand. I steadied it between both hands. Then I leaned forward and read Aunt Benna's words, moving my lips silently as I read like a retard. Dr. Hollings and his sister Carolyn will stop at nothing to destroy the jungle and all the creatures who live here, my aunt wrote in her bold, clear handwriting. Who just doesn't care about killing things and destroying things? Everyone cares about that. They usually have a motivation for doing so. They do not care who they hurt or who they kill. They only care about getting what they want. I swallowed hard, steadied the circle of light over the notebook page, and kept reading. Finding the secret of jungle magic in that cave was the most amazing discovery, Aunt Benna wrote. But I know the secret is not safe as long as Dr. Hollings and Carolyn are around. They will use the jungle magic to do evil. And so I have given the jungle magic and its secret to my nephew Mark. He lives 4,000 miles away in the United States, and so I hope the secret will be safe. If the jungle magic ever falls into the Hollings' hands, my aunt continued, the jungle will be destroyed forever. The island of Badadora will be destroyed, and so will I. I gasped and turned the page. I struggled to keep the flashlight steady so that I could read more. If the Hollings get the jungle magic, Aunt Benna wrote, if Hollings gets that shit, he will shrink my head until there's no trace of me. I must keep my nephew 4,000 miles away from Hollings, because he will shrink Mark's head too to get the magic I have hidden there. A terrified moan escaped my throat.
Shrink my head? Dr. Hollings will shrink my head?
I read the last words again. I must keep my nephew 4,000 miles away.
But I'm not 4,000 miles away. I told myself, I'm here. I'm right here.
Carolyn brought me here to steal the magic to take it from me. She and Dr. Hollings planned to shrink my head. I slammed the notebook shut. I took a deep breath and held it. But it didn't help to slow the...
Alright, which one am I drinking? I'm drinking a drink of water first. That's for my speaking. And the beer I just drank, that was to keep my brain working right.
But it didn't help to slow the thudding of my heart. What have they done to Aunt Benna? I wondered. Did they try to get the secret from her? Did they do something terrible to her? Or did she run away from them? Did she escape? Did they bring me here to track her down so they could capture her again? Then, when I find her, do they plan to shrink both of our heads?
No,
I murmured, trying to stop my body from trembling. I thought they were my friends, but I'm not safe here, I told myself. I'm in terrible danger. I have to get away, get dressed, and get away from these evil people. As fast as I can, I dropped off the stool, turned, and started toward the door. Gotta get out, gotta get away. The words repeated in rhythm with my pounding heart. I reached the screen door, started to push it open, but someone was standing there in the deep shadows, blocking my escape. Where do you think you're going? A voice called.
And so concludes chapter one of How I Got My Shrunken Head on Dune Reads Goosebumps. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hope you guys are enjoying it. You should give me money. I'm going to get a, what is that, the page that Geo uses? I already set it up. It's the account for the Patreon. I think it might just be Patron. Patreon? Whatever. It's where people can give money to people that do interesting things. And then I'll be like, hey, look, I make Goosebumps books and I make cool balls and I'll fucking give you shit. Just give me money. I'm always broke and it sucks. Or not. I don't know. Anyway, you know where to hit me up. You can find all that information on other episodes. You know, it doesn't matter. Until then, I am Dune. That's my nickname. My real name is Zachary. And until then, you all can stay spooky, bitches.